Good afternoon. Today is Friday, October the 16th, 312th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is the general manager of the Humboldt Municipal Water District, Carol Reisch.
Thank you, Brian.
Spelled
with an R.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Just in case the fan mail, we want to get that all correct.
So,
yeah. This afternoon, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about that ever-exciting topic, capital improvement.
Capital improvement.
It may not be hot, it may not be sexy, but you know what? If you like water, you want to pay attention to this one. So we'll talk about some of the plans and also some of the finances of the plans, too.
Yeah, that's the challenge of that one.
There we go. We'll talk about it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Carol Reisch, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Fred Allen.
Fred Allen.
All right. Sometime between 1894 and 1956, said, quote, "He writes so well, he makes me feel like putting my quill back in my goose."
Okay.
I thought you'd appreciate that one.
Actually, last time I think we got on ducks, and now we're with geese, huh?
Well, you know, you're kind of an outdoorsy kind of gal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
and I am.
And these things all land on water, so there's some synergy there.
You're good at making the connection, Brian.
Oh, yeah, as weak as it may be. Water, a lot of times, Carol, when we think about water, it's either, look how muddy it is, look how dirty it is, floods, that kind of time of the year. Or, boy, I went somewhere and the water was so clean I could see the bottom of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Does any of that stuff really matter to you and the water district?
Well, again, us being a water district, our primary, you know, concern and interest is the drinking water. And so we do care about the quality of the water. And if there is a lot of stuff in it, we're actually obligated to both disinfect for public health, but oftentimes to treat it. If it's surface water to deliver to the community, you have to treat it per a number of, you know, very stringent state and federal requirements. But water, as you talked about, even with your opening quote, is kind of, there's a lot of other applications and interest, and people are interested, or agencies, or fishermen, or recreationalists, of good water just when you recreate, or, you know, so. Yeah.
Yeah. The trip we took to Alaska so far, I can remember going over, and it was, oh boy, Skagway. I was taking a little choo-choo
mm-hmm.
train up.
Oh, that's
over.
A cool train. Yeah, I've done that. Very fascinating.
So when you
crest
at the top, and you got the little mutant trees now are 10 feet under ice.
Yeah.
But the water, the lake that's right there.
Yeah.
And the clarity of that.
Yes.
Now, is that water better water? Purer water than what we see in other settings, or because we see through it, we perceive that it's better water, clearer water, safer water, and in fact, it might be just as loaded with little crawlies and creepies anything we run into anywhere else.
I mean, see, right. I mean, there's a lot of factors that influence the clarity of the water. That's probably a glacier formed. You know, lake and if I had to guess up there, it's partly based on the geology. It's probably based on whether you have a lot of inflow from rivers and streams and whether they're carrying sediment debris. So there's a lot of factors, but stuff in the water isn't necessarily bad. You know, coming back to our situation, the Mad River has a lot of turbidity. Boy, it gets really cloudy. For us, turbidity doesn't cause a problem. We're able to naturally filter it out, but it's partly based on the geology and the topography and where we live.
Is that why some water tastes different?
Well, you can have mineral content. Sometimes I went to school at UC Davis. Go Aggies! for those of you.
Okay.
Okay, there's only a few of us up here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
But anyway, first time I came from the Bay Area drinking the Hetch Hetchy water. I mean, just right. fabulous water system there and didn't taste. Went to well water. It was awful. You almost choked on it. So very, very, very minerally, you know, so it really depends where it comes from, what it's been exposed to. So a lot of variety.
Is it worse? I mean, I know better tends to be more of a personal thing, but mm-hmm. when you have some of the minerals in the water, is it healthier? Is it better water?
I think it really depends what it is. I mean, there's the, you know, I don't
okay, non-toxic
I don't have a,
minerals
oh,
in
yeah,
the water.
Oh, yeah, no, you know, yeah, it's it. A lot of that is going to be non-harmful. Yeah, it's going to be more, you know, odor and taste sort of factors. But there are hundreds, if not thousands, of potential constituents you can have in the water. And it's a science that still evolves. Regulations still evolve. Health studies still evolve at the state and federal level. So there's a lot of detail there depending on.
Have they determined, like, for the bottled water industry, standards?
No. Well, there are some level of FDA standards, but it's not regulated like drinking water is through the state and federal governments.
Or
it's
soda.
Less rigorous.
Or fruit drinks,
yeah.
or,
yeah. And there was a, you know, I want to be careful because there was a, to not just say all bottled water is bad, by no means is that a fair or accurate statement, but there was a fairly comprehensive study done a number of years ago by the Natural Resource Defense Council, and I couldn't cite all the specifics, but if you want to talk about that sometime, I'll brush up on that and come in, but the general gist of it was the vast majority of that which they tested for was safe. There was another percentage of it, though, that had some, you know, moderately harmful constituents in it, but there was a small percentage that had really, really harmful stuff in there, and there was no testing, no labeling, you know. So it was one of those things that started raising the public's, you know, kind of consciousness of the differences.
And I guess either we tend to be trusting, or we tend to be trusting of government.
I would hope we're still trusting
either
for the
way.
Most part of our local governments. I would hope.
Oh, okay. Kiss, kiss.
No,
love, love.
No,
hug, hug.
Bye, that.
Bye.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
Well, because we live here, too, and we're close to it.
Yeah, nice try. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:19.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money. You won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Carol Reich. Carol, the concept of water, and I know we're going to get to the infrastructure for the second half of the show, but water, you know, with the preliminary work that you've been doing with the Baggy folks, or I guess the potential customers there, I would think that water quality would be paramount.
It's very important, Brian. Yes. Yeah. Coming back to our business, first of all, there's very stringent regulatory standards to protect public health, but I think the community wants and demands that appropriately so. So water quality is huge, but in our business, there is also the ability to treat a lot. So a lot of times what you start with and what ends up coming through our faucets at home has been through a treatment process.
And we see wet.
Right, right.
So there's no, you know, maybe a little bit of smell, mm-hmm. maybe mm-hmm. a little bit of taste, but those are the only senses that we've
right.
got. I think the story went, one of the major soda companies that has water
mm-hmm.
takes the water out of like the LA River,
mm-hmm.
which immediately gives us all jeebies, right?
Right.
But treats it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's all safe, So that's not a concern. But the treatment process takes out a lot of the natural
stuff. Yes, it can.
So that the water, water isn't water. I don't know what the things in the sport drinks, the electrolytes or whatever.
Electrolytes, right, right.
Okay,
right.
Does that happen in water normally? I want to be sure I'm kind of standing away from the edge on this one.
Yeah, electrolytes, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
but stuff,
but
that,
some, yeah, some
stuff
of the,
in the water
some
that allows
constituents, right.
the system, our systems,
right.
to absorb gets neutralized and then reinfused back in. But that process changes it enough so that it's not the same product. It's not absorbed the way that you know, you go to the creek and you put a hand in and drink it would do. How do you said earlier there's no regulation on this stuff. Do you sense
FDA,
that there's going to be some
FDA
more?
FDA has some, but it's very different and less rigorous. I think there's a movement, and we have a lot of it in our community, that's not only for the water quality aspect, but real concern about the single-use plastic bottles from a disposal, from an energy. So I think there's a lot more awareness raised of the bottled water industry, whether it's the water quality dimension we've touched on a little bit or just other attributes. And in fact, our district and some others in the community have been kind of advocating for drink local water. Our slogan is Tap the Mad.
Okay, I was thinking one big bag is all it takes.
Well,
20,000-gallon bag in the backyard, that's our
water.
Well,
and as we've talked, over the last couple of years about our water resource planning on Loss of the Mill, and we're looking for that customer, and if, we're looking for that one big bag, to use your analogy, to another municipality to sell it and generate some benefit for our community. So, yeah, big bags. Big bags, no bottles. There we go.
It's intriguing for me because, we're about the same age. I could never have imagined people buying water in bottles.
Yes.
I just,
and the price is exorbitant.
And
if you compare the price that you're paying versus what you get from your public water system.
Yeah, and the Bay Area, like you said, the water's normal.
Yeah.
The water here is normal. Yeah. I know. Dave Tyson has bragged that the water quality and the taste and all that kind of stuff from
really
here
stands
up against any of the foo-foo waters across the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So perhaps our norm is a little jaundiced in that. But I still have a very tough time thinking people are buying, and yet we do.
Yeah.
You guys do. You see the water coolers, and it's changing. Do you see that change continuing to occur in that niche?
Well, again, I in some areas, yes, because there's a lot of larger bottle companies that are very good at branding and marketing, and I think a lot of times culturally we become some of a convenience-oriented society. What can I grab and go quick? I'm on the run. I'm in the supermarket. I'm in the car. So I think they've done a good job of marketing and packaging, and then many of us, I'm talking about the collective and Royal We.
The
Royal Week.
I didn't realize that.
you're in there too, Brian.
I'm in the jester section of the court.
But I think it's doubling back now, which is kind of back to the Tap the Mad, concept Take Back the Taps with some of the other slogans that I've seen in other communities. I think also, to switch gears, but it's kind of related. I think those of us working in the public works, public sector, some of our water and wastewater profession, we haven't done a good job of raising awareness and marketing ourselves, whether it's as a profession or what we do. A lot of times you want to be behind the scenes, because if you're on the front page of the paper, oftentimes, or on your show,
it's not good.
but I do view it as a profession, and so it's kind of related. We never were good at marketing and selling our products and ourselves, and they're good at marketing and selling products. We've become convenience oriented, but I do think there is beginning to be a movement in certain areas away from the single use bottles.
Well, it was the guys that do the screw on things at the end of the faucet.
Filters.
That's been around for many years now. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Carol Reisch.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater's 29th season has 6 treats for its audiences. By next summer, it will have presented 2 musicals, 2 comedies, 1 contemporary drama, and a Shakespeare classic at its theater in downtown Eureka. Now playing is Anything Goes, a revival of a musical about antics on an ocean liner featuring Cole Porter's timeless music. Coming in January is American Buffalo, a revival of a Broadway drama about 3 small-time crooks who plan to steal a coin collection. Shakespeare's The Tempest comes in March followed by Next to Normal, a musical with a contemporary score. The season wraps up with a comedy titled The Allergist's Wife. For details about the North Coast Rep season, visit their website, www.ncrt.net. That's www.ncrt.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and activities that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back talking shop this afternoon with Carol Reese, the general manager of the Humboldt Municipal Water District. Carol, we kind of teased in the front about capital improvements, mm-hmm. infrastructure, all that exciting stuff. I would suggest that most people in our area don't understand how deep underneath the streets things are, mm-hmm. how many things there are under the street, mm-hmm. the age of the stuff that's out of sight, the cost of replacement. Now, Fortuna, okay, you mm-hmm. folks certainly are more aware because of the situations that and decisions that had to be made a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Okay, you guys got it. Mm-hmm. The rest of us, we're la 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 and really don't understand what's going on. When you look at the vibrancy of a community or a region, how do you determine if the infrastructure is good, mm-hmm. so-so, adequate, whoops, oh my word. the Carroll standard, how do you measure it?
Well, you don't want the whoopses. You know, because, I mean, whoopses, again, it gets back to, you know, you're on the front page of the paper, you have the outages, and it's a very interesting thing. I mean, my entire career has been in the utility sector prior, you know, natural gas, but where infrastructure is and how it performs is critical to your success of a service mission, and yet it's buried. You used the word sexy before. It's out of sight. It's underground, a lot of it. It's not particularly exciting or interesting. Which some of it, I think, should be about that. We should be thinking about it, maintaining it, planning for its future so that we can meet our service mission to the community. But I do think it's good with some level of awareness that people understand it's there. And you're starting to hear a lot more of us beat the drum because a lot of it was built post-World War II. Remember you talked about we're about the same age?
Replacement. Well, it's replacement time.
It's replacement time. So I think that's what you're – I mean, look after Sandy. I mean, just the devastation that occurred, but then some of the stories and graphic about – there's places in New York City. It's was it 12 stories or so below ground that the levels of infrastructure goes? Now, that's a whole other scale. But it's when you really step back to think about all the underground utilities and the different layers of a subway system, it's pretty amazing.
All the pumps is what I think of.
Yeah, yeah. And in our case, you know, we have a dam. We have these really marvelous structures called the Rainy Wells sunk in the bed of the Mad River that do deliver this really high-quality water that we touched on a few minutes ago. And then a whole bunch of pipe. And some of our pipe is 51 inches in diameter. Not quite as tall as you, Brian, but, you know, it's
now, to me, 51 sounds big.
It's big for here. It's very big for here. Now, in other places, you can have massive tunnels and conduits. But for up here, that's big infrastructure. A lot of the water lines that are going to be, you know, through the city of Eureka, Arcata, Fortuna, you know, you're 2, 4, 6, 8, starting to get bigger. You know, a lot of our domestic system, we're at 33 inches, you know, almost 3 feet, 42 inches. 51 is on the industrial system when we serve those mills. 50-year-old pipe underground. Good news is it's been well maintained, and our pipeline appears to still be in very good shape. But a lot of the other infrastructure, we need to start dealing with it.
What was the original? I mean, not for the district, but
the cost, or
no? I'm thinking wood.
Well, in Eureka's
terracotta,
case,
terracotta. I mean, what was used as the original, you know, aqueducts?
Well, aqueducts in Rome. Yeah. You get back to aqueducts in Rome, and I terracotta at some point coming back to our community. When the city of Eureka had their Mad River project with Swayze Dam, there was a redwood stave pipe that went from the Mad River down.
So they just cored it out?
I'm actually not sure how they manufactured it, but I think it was more wrapped. But you see, and there's actually a beautiful segment of it in the Eureka City Council chambers. So it's you can actually see a slice of it. And there's some fabulous historical
photos. Not the one that's on the wall.
There's one on the wall, yeah. But that's
called paneling
now? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, that could be too.
Okay.
But they've actually got a cross section of it. So that was kind of neat coming back to our community of what's an available resource. They made it work. So yeah, Redwood Stave in our case. And there's some very cool historical photos back to when the city had that
everything
project
started. Yeah. So as you step back and you look, is the infrastructure got another 10 years on it? Is it something that there's literally is a ticking time bomb that, mm-hmm. you know, if we were one earthquake away or, you know, a major storm of mm-hmm. some nature from not only dealing with the residual of that, but also having to deal with the decaying infrastructure?
Well, it really difficult question to answer, and maybe on a future show we can talk a little bit about how we approached it. And you brought up earthquakes. I think earthquakes are also, if we really have the big earthquake, even if it's new infrastructure, we're going to have a lot of issues and problems. So that's the age of just things degrading and breaking and when they need to be replaced is slightly different when you have these really catastrophic natural events that you're going to have a lot of issues. So the way we've thought about it is you don't want to run it to failure, but you want to maximize that useful life for your ratepayers. And when is that? A very difficult question to answer.
95%?
Yeah. But when do you know it's 95%? When do you know it's going to break? And especially electrical equipments and pumps and motors or a pipe. When's a pipe, probably at a joint, really going to let loose underground, absent a seismic event?
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Carol Riche.
Hi, Meredith here from Don's Rental. At Don's Rental, we pride ourselves in being old-fashioned, like standing by our promise to give customers more than they ask for. But old-fashioned doesn't mean out of date. We have the largest selection of the most modern tools and equipment in the area. If there is a tool that makes completing a job faster, smoother, or easier, we buy it. Because providing the latest equipment is our old-fashioned commitment to our customers. Now, if I could only teach Russ how to check his email.
Don's Rental.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45. Back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Carol Riche. Carol, with the infrastructure as it is, you said, how long do you know that a joint's going to last? Or how do you know how much more time is left with a pipe? I would think that there are experts in formulas and all that kind of stuff. But from a layperson's perspective or from a community member's perspective, yeah, you want to maximize. And that's your pocketbook talking.
Exactly, exactly.
But logically, you don't want to go too close to that edge because you can't just order up and insert, what, a couple hundred feet or a couple hundred miles of pipe in. I don't know, you got about a day and a half.
Exactly.
Knock it out, girl.
Exactly, yeah.
So how do you make that determination? When's the time to start replacing and still have that fiduciary responsibility being fully embraced?
Well, I the way we approached it was pretty general here is we first of all did an asset inventory. So we actually did an inventory of every physical piece of infrastructure we have and started with our in-house resources, assessing the condition, looking at the last time it was replaced or upgraded, if there were looking at manufacturers' kind of recommendations. The other thing is there are guidance documents on useful remaining lives, very broad brush, you know, of but at least, you know,
ish.
It's a 40-year-ish. But it's something to start with. But we literally looked at all those resources against an inventory. We did hire our engineers for where we weren't quite sure of exactly how to assess condition and estimate that. And we didn't spend a lot of money. We called them mini-focused engineering studies. You're not trying to go to the nth degree and spend too much money, but it was another set of experienced eyes looking at it to help us understand the condition, but also begin to help us with, and when this no longer works, what are the alternatives to lay the groundwork? So that's where we started. And we also developed a bit of a framework to say how to think about it. One aspect, without getting too technical here, was the importance of it. You know, if it breaks and doesn't work, what's the impact?
Oh, what happens when?
Yeah, what happens when? You know, how big a, ooh, this is really bad, versus, okay, it broke, but we're okay. Another one was redundancy. If it breaks, you can still meet your mission, because there are places we have redundancy in the system. So you'd be willing to run it out a little longer, let that one break, and even if it takes that time. And then you get into some other ones in our business. It's regulatorily required or others. But it really is getting at what happens when it breaks. And we set up three criteria and did our best to apply that criteria to each and every asset. So it was quite an exercise to then ultimately come up with a recommended suite of projects over the next 20 years. But it is only a plan. It's a guide.
Permits. Mm-hmm. You're smiling. Okay. Do you, as being quasi-governmental, have any different standard for getting CEQA, Coastal Commission, any of these other permitting agencies, because it's not me, a goofy, it's you, kind of a brethren?
I don't believe so, no. If there's an emergency, and that has definitions in different statutes and regs, we have broad powers to then go address the emergency for public health and safety. But once you get out of the emergency category and we have a project, we've got to get all the permits, and I believe we're treated just the same as anybody else. And it can be quite onerous and can be quite costly.
And time?
Yeah. Some easier. It really varies.
So there's no compression of the timeline?
No, not that I'm aware of, and not based on my experience.
Yeah. You know.
I guess, it's one of those things, you don't walk in other shoes, but, you chit-chat with your colleagues and others in the community enough. So, I don't believe so.
Yeah, what is it? You don't have to walk in someone else's shoes, but you can see where they've been walking.
Yeah, exactly.
You may just want to avoid
that. I think a project's a project, and we're all subject to the different regulatory and permitting requirements of the respective agencies.
It would be mind-boggling, I think, for some of us to try to comprehend replacing. You lay something on the ground, okay, it's one thing. You got to dig down 25 feet, 50 feet, 150 feet.
Yes.
What do you...
And maintain service while you're doing it. You still have to maintain your service each and every day while you're replacing that piece of pipe that carries the water that provides the service. Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to talk some more down the road after you bring in some of the folks about this kind of stuff, because I think this is, as they say, this is where government operates best.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if I'm part of that group or not. Using that royal we just kind of threw me a little clinker there. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, glad to be here, Brian. Thanks so much for having us.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
All righty, lady.
All righty. Take care.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Carol Reese. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you on Monday.